While once billed as the great equalizer, the novel coronavirus has had anything but an equal effect on society, and this includes the ramification of containment measures, such as the shape of education in New York. To that end, a coalition focused on education opportunity is urging state officials to redouble their efforts to address the starkly different experiences for New York school children. And this effort has become even more critical as New York City public schools and a growing number of schools around the state transition to full-time remote learning. To discuss the concerns of the coalition, we spoke Thursday morning to Ian Rosenblum, Executive Director of Education Trust. Welcome back to the show, Ian.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we need to start with the big news this week, which is New York City's plan to go back to remote learning. What are your biggest concerns as the country's largest school system stops all in-person instruction?
So I think it's important to start by recognizing that for the majority of students in New York City, and particularly for students from low-income backgrounds and students of color, fully remote learning has been a reality the whole time. And so now it'll be the entire district. First of all, there are real concerns about the way the district has rolled this out and the disrespect that's shown to parents and how it will create more chaos for them. At the same time, decisions about whether schools are open should, of course, be made by health officials. So what we're focused on is making sure that all students are receiving the quality remote instruction and support that they need in order to be successful and be connected to their schools during this really difficult time. And that's important in New York City, and it's important across the state.
How do we go about ensuring that that remote learning experience is a quality experience and not something, you know, just killing time, essentially?
Yeah, I think that's such an important question. And for us, it starts off by recognizing two things. First is that teachers and school and district leaders and state education leaders have been working incredibly hard on these issues in unprecedented circumstances. And the second is that at the same time, we know that many students still aren't getting the instruction and support that they need. Certainly for students who were underserved before the pandemic even started, we have deep concerns that educational inequities are getting even worse and opportunity gaps are getting wider. We've been polling parents since the beginning of the pandemic. And when we asked parents just last month about how they were experiencing this fall, what we heard is low satisfaction with remote learning, and really importantly, major gaps between the supports and services that parents say they need for their children and what their schools are actually providing. And these include things like the availability of teachers and the amount of live remote instruction, access to personal learning devices and high-speed internet, and parent information about how their children are doing and whether they're receiving extra support when they're struggling. One of the key things that we found is not only that these major gaps exist, but in the four polls of public school parents that we've conducted since school buildings first closed in the spring, these gaps have persisted. The same themes that parents were telling us in March, they're telling us in October.
So in a letter that your coalition wrote to state education officials, you make the case for providing clear, concrete expectations. When I read that, what I hear is we need some sort of accountability measures and some sort of standards in order to ensure that instruction, services, and supports are hitting those clear, concrete expectations. Do we have any sort of accountability measures in place? I mean, last year we scrapped all the teacher evaluations because of the switch to remote learning. So how do we actually make sure that kids are getting that good experience?
Yeah, so one of the things that the state did really well was this summer, the Board of Regents and State Education Department set out a really clear framework for school reopening. And that framework addressed not only the paramount health and safety concerns that needed to be addressed, but it also really prioritized educational equity. It set out some requirements, it set out some recommendations for how schools should be addressing many of these issues. You know, fast forward 3 or so months later, some of those things seem to be taking place and others we're not so sure about and certainly don't have the data to support and parents are increasingly worried about. And so now what the coalition of civil rights, education, parent, and business organizations is asking is first, let's have clear and concrete expectations from the state on some of these issues and a meaningful mechanism to determine whether those expectations are actually being met. And second, one of the ways to do that is by greater transparency. We don't know in many school districts in the state what student attendance and engagement look like for each group of students. We don't know how much live remote instruction students are receiving and in what subjects. We don't know what student engagement and support actually look like and what share of students aren't logging in. These are critical pieces of information that should be helping to inform the kinds of actions that state leaders, district leaders, parents, and other stakeholders are able to take to make sure that students are receiving the quality education that they need, particularly in these extraordinarily difficult times.
Is it the case that that information's not being collected, not being distributed to state education officials, or not being made public to people like you and other interested parties?
Yeah, so it's a mixture of all of them. So districts collect some data that they're required to for the state, some data that they collect because it's part of their plan to ensure quality teaching and learning. So some districts and schools collect some of this data. The state requires annual and in some cases more frequent submission of some data. And then there's limited data that's made available to the public, often by individual school districts, sometimes at school board meetings or at other times, sometimes through Freedom of Information Law requests. It shouldn't be this hard for the public, for parents, for other stakeholders to get basic information about the quality of education that children are receiving. We should all be on the same page that information, data, should be informing the educational decisions that school, district, and state education leaders are making, and we should be transparent about what that data says and the urgency that it creates to ensure that students are receiving high-quality services.
Legislation was introduced a couple months ago that would enable parents to take advantage of paid family leave to assist in remote learning for their children who are 12 years and under. Is there any reason to believe that parents taking that kind of active role in their kids' education when they're doing remote learning will make a significant difference in that experience, and therefore would an expansion of paid family leave like that be a worthwhile investment in the future of our children?
Well, it's certainly the case that more children being at home for remote learning creates an incredible and an incredibly uneven burden on families. When we've asked in the past about how families are supporting children during fully remote learning, we see gaps by family income and for other groups on parents' abilities to work from home versus having to find care or make other arrangements for their children because they don't have a position that enables them to do their job and earn a living by working from home. And so these issues of paid family leave, of access to high-quality childcare for school-age children and for infants and toddlers and younger children as well, are really critical as we think about the gaps in the supports that are available to families, and particularly families from low-income backgrounds, and the families in communities that have been hardest hit by the pandemic, including communities of color.
Does the education landscape in New York right now ever, I don't know, make you just depressed?
Well, you know, I think rather than getting depressed, you know, we focus on the core value at the heart of public education. And that's that it provides, when it's high quality, the chance for students to achieve their goals, their aspirations. And even more so now, it's a critical source of stability for children at a time when so much is difficult and so much is changing and uncertain, and there's greater financial insecurity than ever before. And so what we focus on is the opportunity and how do we use this moment to address those pre-existing inequities and the widening inequities in order to better support children at a time when they need it more than ever, and that families are counting on public institutions.
But I mean, you just mentioned at the start of the interview that there were gross inequities in terms of who was getting access to in-person instruction in New York City. So it doesn't seem like we're making a lot of progress right now on addressing educational opportunities and making them more available. And that's only going to be made worse now when we don't have the support system in place as we switch to remote learning. So what is there to be optimistic about?
Well, I think the glass half full side of it is that we've also seen in the pandemic a lot of the ways that government can work, and that government, when it's based on data, based on science, can serve the public and can provide the most services to the families that have the greatest needs. In the education system, we've seen educators, teachers, school leaders, district leaders working incredibly hard to build the plane as they're flying it in new circumstances that depend on remote learning. We've seen that be really successful, or more successful in some places than others. And looking at those successes in the public sector generally, in our education system specifically, says we can do this. It won't be the same as in-person learning, but certainly there's a lot more that we can do to serve children who have been underserved by our education system, and to make sure that we're using this moment to be completely aware of and address with urgency the educational inequities that we were talking about a year ago and much, much longer than that.
But take, for example, the decision to close schools in New York City. A lot of the coverage of that has suggested that this decision, while it was based on the New York City mayor's previous line in the sand over 3% positivity rate of testing for the virus, that really the decision ultimately was rooted in something that the teachers union for New York City wanted, and not necessarily in the best interest of what science and data was saying, as activities that involve higher transmission continue in New York City and surround the state. So, I mean, do you think that decision then in New York City to close schools was rooted in science and facts, or do you have concerns about it?
So, again, I think it's really important to separate two things. The science decisions should be made based on science and by health officials. The education decision should be rooted in what's best educationally and to address educational inequity. And so, you know, I would just note again that before yesterday's announcement to close all school buildings, the large majority of students from low-income backgrounds and students of color in New York City were already learning fully remotely. So the reality today creates chaos for about 300,000 families, but has already been the circumstances that most New York City students were in. And so the question that we have today was just as important yesterday and just as important the day before and just as important last month, which is, how is New York City going to make sure that children who are learning remotely receive a quality education right now? What is the plan to do that? What is the city's role? And how can state actions, like the ones that the New York Equity Coalition is suggesting, support New York City and school districts across the state in providing that high-quality remote instruction when, from all the evidence that we're seeing, it's certainly not going away?
We've been speaking with Ian Rosenblum. He is Executive Director of Education Trust, which is a member of the New York Equity Coalition. Ian, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.